Okay, it's WMFO. All right, everybody, that's Six on Six from Mark. It's just after the hour of 10 o'clock, 10:03 in the morning on Saturday, WMFO Medford with Mark and Les Hurwitz. Mark, why don't you tell us about that last six-song set?
Well, it started out with Seconds by U2, which is off the War album, which I believe that was 1982 or 83.
Mm-hmm. That deluxe edition was remastered.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And boy, it sounds fresher today than it did, say, 20 years ago, that's for sure. So kind of an angry song, you know, about little worries about what's going on. And back then, there were some worries, and today there seem to be worries from a lot of people. So kind of an angry, warlike song. I mean, there was even that segment in the middle. And that was followed by... I can't see that from here.
The Avid Brothers.
Sorry. The Avid Brothers, Head Full of Doubt. And... if you don't know the Avid Brothers, if you haven't heard the Avid Brothers, they're incredible songwriters, two brothers, and they do a lot of Americana. And that song, if you've ever seen the video, it's just an award-winning video about basically a town that gets developed out of nowhere in the middle of farmland and becomes this really successful big town, and then it slowly starts to fall apart. And at the end, it comes crashing down and becomes farmland again, and you just see this car pull up by a billboard that's crashing down at night, and a lot of interesting imagery there, and hoping we're not heading towards something like that, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. But they're incredible songwriters, really great songwriters.
Agreed.
Yeah. So that was followed by Shame on You.
Indigo Girls.
Indigo Girls, thank you very much. And... also kind of an angry song, got a happy beat to it, kind of that almost Bo Diddley type sound, but just a song, they're not too pleased about what was happening at the time as far as the treatment of people, let's just leave it at that. Treatment of people who...
Immigrants.
Yeah. If you want to go that route, yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
Yep. So, and again, they're a band that they've done a lot of protest music, and their music sounds... just as fresh today as it did, you know, 15, 20, 25 years ago. And after that came definitely a protest song. This is an old Woody Guthrie song, and it's Billy Bragg and Wilco off Mermaid Avenue, which was a tribute to Woody Guthrie, called The Unwelcome Guest. And that's one of those songs that they've picked apart. People have just tried to figure out what was Woody Guthrie singing about there. And with Woody Guthrie, you never really knew, but you kind of knew at the same time. And Unwelcome Guest, I mean, I'll leave that there. Mm-hmm. Just the title kind of speaks volumes.
Yeah, would you like a Cheeto? Here you go.
Hey, thank you very much. And after that was a band that a lot of people don't know about called Flaming Lips, which is a very underrated band. And he's an odd person, the lead singer, to say the least. He's very strange. I think in concert, he sometimes goes into the beginning of concert in this pod that comes out of the roof, like out of the ceiling of the shows. He's just very eccentric. But that song's called Fight Test, and it's a kind of a good message where he's talking about, you know, should you be complacent? Should you... you know, not turn the other cheek? What should you do if you think that things are not going well? And he doesn't really have an answer for it. So one of the few songs he's done that kind of political, but again, that's another song that people have kind of picked apart. Also, did you notice that song sounds a lot like Father and Son by Cat Stevens?
I didn't.
And there was actually, I believe there was some kind of a legal issue because it sounded so much like that song.
Oh, okay.
But hey, if you're going to steal a song from someone, that's a great song to steal from.
It is.
And then we finished up with one of my favorite songs of all time, Biko by Peter Gabriel, which obviously it has nothing to do with what's been going on the past few days because, you know, A, it's a long time ago. Mm-hmm. B, it's about an activist from South Africa during apartheid. Mm. But some of the lyrics at the end, you know, the lyric, you can blow out a candle, but you can't blow out a fire. And the eyes of the world are watching now. That line is pretty chilling because everyone is watching, trying to figure out what's going to happen next year. So that's
thank you
about
for those
it.
Six songs. I think that we get the gist of what you're trying to say.
Yeah. And now we're going to play some happy music now, right? Actually, we're not. We're going to talk about food.
Yeah, we are. Did your own segue there.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah. Hey, you all know Mark from Boston's Hidden Restaurants, hiddenboston.com, the blog Boston Restaurant Talk, lots of articles in Dig Boston and Boston Magazine, some segments on BZ Radio. I'm running out of breath here. Mark, I know you've got some industry news about food and some new reviews, so take us away.
Well, I'm going to start out by talking about a place I visited yesterday that's opening on November 29th, and a lot of people are excited about it. It's called Eataly. It's coming to the Prudential Center. It's going to open up in the old food court, if you are familiar with Prudential Center. It's kind of facing 800 Boylston, actually 800 and 888 Boylston. And Eataly is going to be a huge Italian emporium slash marketplace with several restaurants and little dining spots, cafes. And it's almost all on the second floor where the food court used to be. And at times, walking around, you can kind of feel, okay, oh, yeah, this is where the Indian restaurant used to be, or, oh, this is where the Chinese place used to be, the sandwich shop. But they did such a nice job of it that, for the most part, you have no idea what was there in the past. It's a beautiful space now. A lot of stations for pizza, cheese, meat, coffee, chocolates, bread. I mean, I could go on. There's all these different sections. There's a restaurant Barbara Lynch is working on with the Ely people called Pesce. And that's going to be a seafood place with a raw bar right in the middle of the space. And also downstairs by the entrance to Boylston on the ground floor, there's a little piece of Ely right down there. It's a little cafe where you can get coffee and crepes and some other stuff.
Oh, cool. And I want to say that folks that follow you on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, you had a bunch of pictures from that.
I had a bunch of pictures on Instagram. And also, I'm writing an article right now. And can't talk too much about it, but it's going to give a big description of Eataly. It's going to show some pictures, and it'll be out next week. So I'll try to get a little more information on that.
And when does that whole extravaganza open over there?
It opens November 29th. So we got a sneak peek. And, you know, I like the space better than the one in New York at Madison Square. It feels more intimate, a little more cozy, a lot of little nooks and crannies. So the one in New York is like, it's almost like a warehouse. It's huge. And this is not as big, but it does feel a little more like a, it's manageable, I guess you could say.
Oh, very cool. I can't wait to try it.
Oh, and I get to meet Mario Batali.
Yeah.
And you know what?
The orange Crocs.
He's a great guy. He is funny. He is just like, you know, if you see him on TV, he's just like that. He's kind of mellow, laid back, funny, funny guy. So, as far as reviews, I mean, I was in last week, so I haven't done much since then. I'll give you a little sneak peek of a place I'm going to review called Chocho's. It's in the Porter Square Marketplace, actually the Porter Square Food Court, which is in the old Sears building. And unlike most of the places in the food court, which are Japanese, this is Korean and Thai. And one of the dishes I had there is it's a soft tofu stew. Which a lot of people don't like tofu, but believe me, even if you don't like tofu, this is an incredible dish. It's kind of a traditional Korean stew slash soup, and very spicy, and the tofu kind of absorbs the spices, and it's just so tasty, and it's cheap, you know, like $8 or $9 for a lot of the meals.
I was going to say, tofu is one of those things that you need to know how to cook. Because,
yeah.
Because it depends on taking on the flavors of what it's being cooked with.
Right, and for me, you know, if you have a nice spicy broth, that's going to help a lot because otherwise it might be too bland.
Yeah.
Believe me, it's not bland.
Oh.
So a couple other, really quickly, a couple major stories this week. One is that the Rattlesnake Bar and Grill in the Back Bay, I might have mentioned this last week, they closed. And then it looked like they might reopen, but it's actually gone for good. So they are closing, and it's history. They had a little party last week, and that's that. The other story, kind of a happier story, is that Hopsters, which is a community brewery where people can go in and make their own beer, and you can also eat there. They're looking at a major national expansion. So they're going to open one. They're in Newton right now. They're going to open one at Seaport District. Actually, Fort Point, closer to Fort Point. And they're going to try to open up a bunch around the country, too. So more news on that later. But right now it looks like several locations in different cities around the country.
So did you say that's a brewery or where people can go there to...
It's a brewery, but it's also a community brewery. So you can go in there and you can use their ingredients and make your own beer there.
Get out of town.
It's really interesting. Wow. I mean, and the food's good. We went there for dinner, took a look at some of the areas where you can make your own beer, and it's kind of a neat concept. I mean, it's the first of its kind, I think, in the Boston area.
I think John Miller's going to need to be talked about with this one. Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, heard definitely. About that. So looking great. Forward to that.
All right, we can take my car to that one.
I was going to say, whose car are we going to take? Yeah. But sure, okay.
Yeah. All right, thank you, Mark. Very much appreciated. 10:14 in the morning. And what should we do now? Should we go to our friend Les? I think we should.
Okay, let's do that.
All right, I'm going to bring up mic number 3. Hi, Les.
Hello,
how
Mike.
How are you?
I'm vertical.
Vertical's good.
Yep. I wish I was horizontal, but still above ground. I'm tired. But anyway, really excited that you're here, number one. And number two, that you're going to treat us to some classical. Well, you have a different description of how you would do this. Tell us about what you've got today in the classical sense, if you will.
Okay. We'll be listening to 3 performances, all on piano. And before I start, I would beseech you to listen to each of these in a different way. And I'll explain probably right after the first, my description of the first composition. Now, what you're going to hear is an etude. Etude, of course, in French meaning study. Chopin wrote this etude. He wrote 2 groups of etudes. And each etude is designed to attack a particular technical, that is, physical problem on the piano. And if it's learned really well, out of it emerges a really wonderful piece of music. So these are at a very high level. Now, this etude is extremely difficult in that what the pianist has to do is, in the right hand, perform notes in one rhythm, a very quick rhythm, at approximately, and I'm computing this in terms of approximation, at about 20 to 22 notes per second in the right hand. And once these notes start, they do not end. It goes all the way through to the end of the piece. The melody is in the left hand. Therefore, it is a very, very difficult piece because there is so much going on. Now, the performer, several years ago when I was teaching at the Longy School of Music, I was asked to do a lecture on music education in Soviet Russia. This was during the 80s before the fall of communism. And the material I got after I wrote to the Ministry of Culture in Soviet Russia, they sent a lot of material, and it took me a long time to separate the chaff from the grain, to get the truth put together in one little group. And so, and by the way, one of the things that they sent me was a group of recordings. Now, you're going to hear a recording directly from Soviet Russia, done probably in the late 50s, by a pianist who was then unknown, 17 years old. He now reigns as one of the top 4 or 5 great pianists of our time, Vladimir Ashkenazy. That's Ashkenazy, Vladimir. And at this time, he was simply a teenager working on music. Now, what I'm going to ask you to do, and here is the premise of my discourse today. We talk about human genius all the time. We deal with it all the time. You listen to music, you heard a lot of genius today, as a matter of fact. We read about it, we listen to it, we talk about it. From a distance, we understand what the word genius means. After all, take someone like Edison and his electric bulb. Genius, a product. What about Tesla and AC, which is better than DC in terms of usage? Well, that's a product. What about Horowitz and his transcriptions? These are products. Everything is performance. Everything in this world is performance to prove a point. If it happens to deal with the word genius, that's even better. It's so easy to say that Yasha Heifetz performed his first recital at age 8. All right, that's genius. Okay. Mozart wrote music before he could write his own name. That's genius. Okay. But I'm going to ask you to look at genius from another perspective. You've never done this before, I'm quite sure. And it is, first of all, to listen to, for instance, in this first performance, an unknown 17-year-old kid performing this piece. And as you listen, and this would apply to the three compositions you're going to hear, try to image the picture, in this case, of a 17-year-old kid playing this piece. This will tell you what genius is. Not only will you hear the notes, but something will be happening to the notes. There is a world of difference between being a piano player and a musician. And the difference is what you're going to hear now. Picture at every moment you hear this, during every moment you hear this, a 17-year-old kid playing this. Okay, picture a 17-year-old kid playing something like that in that manner. It is music. It moves you, let alone the physical problems endemic to this piece. In the second performance, you're going to hear a composition called A Little White Donkey, French composer Jacques Ibert, I-B-E-R-T. The performer is, who is now one of the great musicians of our time, a Norwegian pianist. He's about 46 now. Leif Ove Andsnes. The last name is A-N-D-S-N-E-S, in case you want to learn more about him. Leif, L-E-I-F, and then O-V-E. He goes by these two words, Leif Ove. I'm not a name dropper. I don't like doing that. I don't like blowing my own horn. But in this case, I have to tell you that I underwent a dream several years ago in that this man called me, little old me, from Norway, and wanted to meet me when he was in Boston for the first time in performance. And he was one of the first musicians in Boston, actually the Boston Boston Symphony Orchestra, to stay here 5 days, 5 days to play with the symphony orchestra. And during one of those 5 days, he would like to come out to my house. Can you imagine that? And visit me. So to make a long story short, I'm not going to go into the reasons why he called me and all that sort of thing. That's my problem. I simply want to tell you something about it, and it involves your friend Mark over here. What a funny little story. When I told the family that Ansnes was going to come out to see me, and I invited him for supper, and Ansnes himself said he would come down by cab from the hotel, which is probably near Symphony Hall. Mark can tell you that a little better a little later on. And I said, no way. I will have someone pick you up. Mark is the one who picked up this great pianist and brought him to the house. He was with me after supper. We he and I repaired to the living room, and we did nothing but music. This was a dream. Already at age 28, he was considered the world's greatest pianist under age 30. He was known all over the world already. He had recorded 7 or 8 recordings. They were all, he was known already all over the world. At any rate, Mark went out perhaps on a date or whatever, he can tell you, probably around 7 o'clock. When Mark came back, which was around midnight, Leifova and I were still there. We had thought that he would call for a cab and go back to the hotel. We were still together around 12 or 1. Now, Mark asked, would you like to come with me? I'll take you back to your hotel. So to make a long story short, he took this great pianist back to the hotel. And during this period, when the ride was being enacted, I asked myself, first of all, what is this man, what does he talk about? And when Mark came back into the house, and I asked, what does this great man talk to you about? What did he talk to you about when you were in the car together? And there was one word, girls. So I thought I'd let you know about this story. It's really a wonderful story. At any rate, Hans Liszt today is considered one of the top 5 or 6 of the great pianists. Now, talk about genius. And he apologized to me. Imagine this man apologizing to me for this reason. He could not remember when he had learned the piece you were about to hear. He was either 6 or 7. He could not remember which of the 2 years. Now, in this recording and the recording thereafter, both of the next 2 recordings will be by Hans Liszt. This is a recording that Hans Liszt made about 5 or 6 years ago in an album called Horizons, which depicts some of the great memories he had as he grew. And this is a piece that he learned when he was either 6 or 7. Picture as you hear it. A little guy in short pants, the diaper's still drying out on the clothesline for the last time, and it's called A Little White Donkey. Keep in mind that you're hearing a piece that this man learned when he was 6 or 7. Think of the reality that he had memorized it. It can only be played if it's memorized. Have fun listening to it. There you have it. Did you think of or see in your minds a 6-year-old playing something like that? Okay, the last of the 3 that you're going to hear is called By the Sea by a Middle European composer by the name of Smetana, S-M-E-T-A-N-A. This piece, when you hear it, you'll ask, my goodness, who plays this piece? You may not hear this piece again. It's almost never played. It's really quite a beautiful piece. The man, Smetana, really understood how to write for the piano. It's an extremely difficult piece. When you hear the finger action around the melody, think of the development of an idea pictorially of waves, water, the idea of water. And listen to how Ansnes treats these notes. It's almost as if they're not being played. Remember, the piano was a percussion instrument, but these notes don't sound as if they're percussed at all. Now, Ansnes, this is inside information. You're not going to see it on the liner notes. Ansnes, I asked him, when was your first public recital? He said, I was 14 years old. And he played this in this first recital, 90-minute recital, memorized, first one, the first of thousands to follow. This piece is so difficult, it is extremely difficult. And I asked him, how could a 14-year-old play some of these chords? They're massive. And Ansnes, who was not a small man, he's a little over 6 feet tall and a strapping guy, he said, I was very big for my age, and therefore I had no problems with the piece. It's hard to believe. By the way, I have to tell you, he had no concept at this point, earlier in his career, the latitude the terraces below his reality, the genius. He said, after telling me about A Little White Donkey, he said, every 6 or 7 year old kid should learn this. And I asked myself, who in the world is he talking? Who is he talking about? No one could play it. But listen to this piece and think of a 14-year-old kid playing this piece.
Yeah, for some reason it played the... I had it on 3, but let's do that. Let's try this again. Let's just see if this will play the right one this time. I don't know why I did that. We'll try it again.
There it is. I thought perhaps you would like to know a little more about what the word genius means by joining me in a way of concentration in listening to music in a slightly different way. If you didn't enjoy it, don't tell me. Okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Les. I love it. And I'm so glad that you actually brought some classical, and I'm doing the air quotes, to play for us.
My pleasure. I'll do it again if you'd like.
Yeah, please. That was just awesome. It was really, really nice.
It was.
And I was saying about the third one, and I want you, Mark, to comment, too, about that whole dream of...
Oh, right, because I can't let that one go.
No. No, please do. But I was just saying that, you know, as sort of a pianist myself as a kid, I recognized in that third piece, By the Sea, just, I was saying, you know, the pedal work that he must be doing with his feet to make that dreamy sound happen with all the runs. It was just gorgeous.
Well, the music, of course, proves there are composers who consider the piano a miniature orchestra. And when you get the word simultaneity, and by the way, I'd like to deal with simultaneity to let you know where a pianist can take that instrument, if Mike allows me to do it sometime.
Absolutely. Now, Mark, you want to you have some comments about that dream sequence there?
No, I mean, he was right. We got in the car, and I'm thinking, all right, what do we talk about? So I was gonna ask him, I'm like, you know, what's Norway like? But then I realized that's a really stupid question. So
then I was thinking,
what do you think of the Sox chances this year? And then I realized it's from Norway. Yeah. So we started talking about women. And
they have no idea over there either, do they?
Well, the other thing is, I was driving on Storrow Drive, and I took a turn a little too quick, and I'm thinking, wow, what if we drove into the river? I mean, this guy is really important, and you know, I got to be really careful here. So I drove kind of slow in the right lane from that point on. But he was a nice guy. And, he was up for the small talk, which is good, because ultimately I'm kind of a shallow person.
You know, you never told me about this, Mark, and I have to tell you, at the time you were in the car, either way, both ways, I said to myself, this man's fingers are insured for millions of dollars. Lloyd's of London or Sotheby's or somewhere in London. He is insured. Now, these great artists are insured for their fingers. And I thought to myself, what if Mark screws up?
I know. Then the headline the next day would be, food writer, other person, drive into river. Yeah. Or maybe they'd probably be the other way around, I guess.
Quite a story.
Yeah,
and, of course, Mark certifies that the story is real because he was there.
Mm-hmm. I was. And I wasn't on a date that night. I was actually out with my friends watching a horrible movie at the Kendall Cinema.
All right. So. Thanks, you guys.
You're more than welcome, Mike.
All right. 10:38 in the morning. We have a time for maybe one and a half sets before Something About the Women comes in. And excited to welcome our new Something About the Women colleague, Liz. She'll be here for the full 2 hours today, so she'll be coming in soon. But until then, let's have some new noise. Bob Angel, another WMFO DJ, brought this in when he was here. It's a new CD called Sting. The CD is called 57th and 9th. Brand new, and he's actually kind of going back to his roots and kind of a rock and roll-y kind of a CD, which is nice to hear. This is new from Sting, called Petrolhead, here at WMFO.
Truth. Was she ever there? Was she ever?
10:55 in the morning. Mike here on the mic. Thank you very much. everybody, for tuning in. Mark and Les Hurwitz, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it very much. You'll come back soon, I hope?
Hey, whenever. How about in a couple hours?
Sure.
Are you bringing lunch?
No, that's your job.
Oh, wait. Brian's in a couple hours.
He is. He won't like that.
No, he won't. Oh, well.
All right.
But yeah, sure.
Well, thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Something About the Women, as you know, is coming up here at 11. And we have our brand new DJ in the house, Liz.
Yay.
What's going on?
Nothing much.
It's the first time we've done like a legit crossover here.
I know. This is nice.
It's very nice. Yep. So I know what Jane does. She does, you know, the thing at noon. And Sue just tries to play everything that blows us away. What's your deal?
I usually have a theme every week because I like all different genres of music. And so I usually like to keep a theme. And it kind of challenges me to look up new music and discover new artists. So this week I'm focusing on minority groups, whether the women consider themselves Black or African American or Latina. So in light of the election, I'm celebrating.
There was an election?
Oh, yeah. I'm celebrating women who might be marginalized due to their race or ethnic backgrounds.
Okay, very nice theme for the show. I wish you luck.
Thank you.
I'll be listening.
Awesome.
For
I'll
sure.
Be listening too.
Oh, awesome. Thanks.
All right, so may I push the button here?
You may.
All right, you picked something from Ike and Tina Turner.
Yes.
And this is Something About the Women here at WMFO. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'll be back in 2 weeks after I do the Thanksgiving thing. I'm Mike on the mic.
Have a good weekend, all.
Bye-bye.